So I think it's about making things relatable.
Yeah.
And I also believe that there's a big portion here in being a trusted source. And trust is something, at least maybe that we are like from Sweden, so maybe we're a little bit naive in this sense, but trust is something that's there from the beginning, and you could potentially lose it. So we don't necessarily believe that that's something you earn, but there is still an element of where it's easier to trust certain people. So in our case, we came in as one independent. There's a bunch of VC vendors out there that are trying to build forums and platforms themselves. But I don't want to say there's a catch. It's their business model. And I genuinely think they want to share and probably share some of our missions. But the problem is that I don't necessarily want to spill my dirty secrets and go into details and so on with somebody that, you know, is my owner, potentially my owner. So it's a little bit, you know, uncomfortable, that relationship. It's like, I know they essentially want to invest money in me.
Right.
So there's that power relationship. And for us, it's like, I don't want to sell you anything. We don't want to invest money in you. What we want to do is democratize knowledge together with you.
Bonanza Growth Podcast, innovation, strategy, and UX for SaaS. Bonanza Studios is a growth consultancy for SaaS and fintech startups. Every SaaS business needs to fight in three different battles. First, product market fit, discovering a growing marketing and designing a compelling and undeniable solution to meet that demand. Second, product-led growth, turning your product into a growth vehicle by leveraging outcome-driven UX design. And third, creative marketing and organic brand building. If you're looking for a reliable partner to drive growth, check out our website at bonanza-studios.com.
I'm all here to listen about the true bromance.
I don't think we've ever been...
To us.
Yeah.
It's, of course, a passion thing for us, and our wives can be quite tired of us when it comes to this. So, yeah, good that we can sort of speak out from our hearts around this.
Listen, one of the reasons I was really excited... I don't get excited so much for things these days as you grow older.
I don't believe you, Bharad. He seems like an excited guy.
Look, I've been in the startup field and I am a bulldozer. I'm a solopreneur. I've done partnership. I've been part of founding teams. Be honest about it, it never turned out well. So I am committed to course correct.
Okay.
Right.
Right. And it's something that I feel it day to day. If I have a great partner next to me, I trust them. They trust me. There's a good distribution of tasks. There's a yin and yang going on. I could have done what I've achieved a lot faster. I don't want to say 10 times faster,
right,
like, but a lot faster. So this is a crash course for me. You are also, you are fathers of kids. I am a newly father, so I'm all ears. I would love to hear your stories, wherever you want to take us from. I leave it up to you when would be that starting date. I have 50 minutes of pure attention giving to you.
I think one thing that is good to understand is that we are not people that has been founders and so from the start. I mean, looking at our careers, we have worked for smaller companies, bigger companies, but we have been in some great scale-up journeys and so on. But this is actually our first founding story. And we are like, I mean, you're in the 40s. I mean, not the 50s yet, but I'm getting there, right? So this is more of a midlife crisis kind of project than being the young founder. Or what do you say, Daniel?
Yeah, absolutely. We have built a platform and a community towards the community we used to belong ourselves. So we're essentially building something that we were missing when we were operators. You know, we were operators for almost 20 years. So we felt that there was a gap a little bit on the European scene. And after the last stint where Thomas and I worked together, when we were done with that exercise, we felt like, well, it's now or never. And midlife crisis hit, we wanted to hang out. But I think just to come back with you, I don't think like many young founders, we are defined by our jobs. We love what we do. But we're not just the sassiest two men. At least I should speak for myself. Maybe Thomas will be like, what the heck are you talking about? I'm all sassiest and nothing else. Like, I think, you know, we're fathers.
Yes.
I'm a father of two. I'm married. Yes. I love all kinds of sports and so on. Sassiest is a big portion of my life, but it's not my life entirely. There's a bunch of other stuff happening. I think we are probably in a position in our lives, we're a little bit older, we've had good careers up to this. It's not do or die exercise with this. Like, you know, we run with this. It's a lot of fun, but it's part of who we are. It's not only who we are.
Yeah. And two small kids. I have three teenage daughters, so we're a little bit out of phase there. But also looking at our careers, Daniel, you've been working in sales and sales leadership operations for the last 15 to 20 years in B2B SaaS companies. I've been a little bit, you know, all over the place within sales, marketing, product, partnership, and so on. So we have a quite wide range of experience. And as Daniel said, I mean, SaaSiest wasn't meant to be a business from the get-go. And there is very many places in our journey where this would have this wouldn't have happened, right? So probably, I mean, we worked together for 5 years at the company called InRiver that grew from 25 people to 400 people during the years we were there, and then we split apart because we started working on different companies. But yeah. That was one of the reasons why we started SaaSiest, because we wanted to hang out, have a side project, right? But if we would have continued working at the river, continuing hanging out there, playing ping pong in the breaks, and, you know, we wouldn't have started SaaSiest. So SaaSiest was born out of that we wanted to do something on the side, and also based on a common interest and that we saw a need sort of out there. But yeah, in the beginning, we just wanted to hang out.
You know about how this all started? Like, I remember it like yesterday. I'm actually looking at this particular room right now through the window here. So I had this idea of, like, you know, I had been approached to share some experience I had on the sales side. I was a decent revenue guy and had built some sales teams and so on. And someone in the local community said, like, can you share something and so on? And just having consultancy exercise doesn't necessarily scale. I had a real job and I was actually begging Thomas. It started off with a normal ask. Hey, Thomas, should we do a podcast together on sales or something?
No, we shouldn't.
And he was like, no.
I've already done 5 different podcasts in my life. Yeah. I wasn't that excited.
Yeah. He wasn't sold. He wasn't sold. And then the asking went into, like, come on, buddy, we're friends. And, like, I really asked him in a long time. And then actually we sat down together and Thomas was like, okay, if we're going to do something together, you might like sales, but there's a lot of people that don't like sales or not as passionate about you. And I'm one of those that have other passions as well. So can we maybe look at this a little bit broader from a B2B SaaS perspective? And that's where the idea was, like, huh, maybe that's not a bad idea. And that's how the infant steps were taken into the SaaS exercise. And it was in my winter garden one day.
Yeah. And I think we both agreed on that this wouldn't be a Swedish exercise. I mean, we live both in southern Sweden, that at least we should do the content in English and focus primarily on the Nordics to start with. The Nordic B2B SaaS company. So that's where we started interviewing leaders in order to understand their secret sauce when it comes to scaling teams and create great products and learn from their mistakes and so on. And it was our own curiosity that sort of fueled what we wanted to do. And as you mentioned here before, one great thing by doing a podcast is that you meet and you get to know a lot of people and you learn yourself, right? And that's how it started as well. And, you know, we just decided to do one podcast every second week, and that was it.
The rest is history.
The rest is... So how long SaaS has been around?
Yeah, so we started... The first podcast episodes came out...
Wow.
November 3rd, 2020.
You guys are fast operators.
We are.
As mentioned, midlife crisis. Yeah. Midlife crisis. A lot of time on our hands. Yeah.
So I think, as we said, you know, we didn't have big ambitions from the get-go, but we also can't resist an opportunity.
Yeah.
No, and we like to act fast, as you said. So the first thing that happened, this was still during COVID, was that Clubhouse was the hottest kid on the block for a few months. Yeah. Maybe you remember it. And we saw some other person here in the Nordics doing a Clubhouse session on PLG or something for the SaaS industry in 2 weeks' time. So we decided, let's do it next week. Let's do it beforehand, and let's get started on this platform. Actually, we invited him as well to the session so he could promote his session. So I think that was fair, even if we act a little bit faster than he did. And then we continued doing this for 17 weeks in a row. Wow. And we were the only ones that was so consistent on the platform. Not the bigger players in our field, they didn't do it. So every week we invited six people to a panel on different topics. And, you know, and this was, you know, on the side of our regular works as well. So during that time, we had 100 different speakers in our Clubhouse sessions plus the podcast sessions. So within a few months, we have talked to 120 people. And this was people we didn't know before. We worked really, really hard on LinkedIn to find the right profiles. We wanted to have a good Nordic spread. We wanted to have a good diversity. So we really, really, you know, explored who's out there.
So basically, your Clubhouse was the MVP for SaaS.
I mean, it was an important catalyst.
Yeah,
definitely. I mean, it was an accelerator, because at that point, we only, quote unquote, only here, I guess, had a podcast. And we didn't have any grand ambitions to do something of the nature that we see today. It wasn't in the books for us then. So when Clubhouse popped up, it was clearly an opportunity where a lot of tech discussions would happen. So it was a natural fit for us. We were a little bit lucky that we got in our region rather early access to the platform.
Very important.
Yeah. So via that, we could start inviting people. And like, I know Thomas and I joked, like, forever we've branded some people, because you remember at Clubhouse, people were screaming for these invites.
Yeah.
And we had a gazillion amount of invites because we were early adopters to this. So we could invite people and they felt like, wow, Thomas and Daniel inviting me to this platform. And that would kickstart. But what we saw there was nothing we had necessarily expected and planned. Every Friday, there would be 50, 60, 100, 150 people, depending on the topic, show up between 8 and 9 in the morning to sit there and engage in these conversations. And like, you know, there's no, as you remember Clubhouse, there's no video or anything like that. It's just voice.
Yeah.
And people would engage.
It's in your underpants, more or less.
Yeah, exactly. People would engage and commit. And out of this exercise, there grew this clear idea from the community, from these people that have attended, panelists, attendees, and so on, saying, hey guys, we need to somehow take the great discussions that we have in Clubhouse here, somehow make them available in other forums. And that's how the idea was, you know, created for, like, okay, let's structure this a little bit. Let's create a community. Let's create a forum. And quickly after this, you know, we spun off a Slack channel. I think when we opened up the doors for that, we had 400 or 500 people, like, from day one in that Slack channel. And then a few months later,
April 2021. So you can say podcast started November 2020, Clubhouse February, Slack community April.
Yeah.
So it went really, really fast.
Yeah. And what I was saying also is that, I mean, it went fast. Mm-hmm. And then a few months after this exercise with opening up the Slack, again, the community came back and said, like, let's formalize this even more. It was during COVID time. People wanted to have a platform where they could learn. So we decided to run a digital SaaS conference, you know, our very, very first SaaS conference.
But even more funnier story, Dan, if we're going to be a little bit transparent.
You can tell the story in a second, Thomas. Okay, what I wanted to say is that all these ideas were truly co-created with the community.
Yes.
That's where we knew that, okay, it's not me and Thomas in this. Yes, you know, we might own the business. We might be, in some cases, the face of the business, at least in early days, and bringing the people together. But many of these fantastic ideas and what has leaped us forward was born by the community. And Thomas, obviously the conference was one of those. Go ahead.
Yeah. Also, maybe it would have been so anyway. We kept a really low profile because we had full-time jobs and we still worked our full-time jobs. This was a thing on the side, right? So we still represented our employers. So that also meant that we need to lift up people in the community, right? So, there was a media company here in Sweden that boasted that they had the hottest SaaS conference in the Nordics. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we were looking at it, and it turned out that all the information were in Swedish, and all the speakers were from Stockholm. And if you know the Nordics, in Finland, they speak mostly Finnish, and in Denmark and Norway, it's not always that you understand each other, right? So it was no Nordic conference. So we decided we're going to do another conference. It's going to be much better. It's going to be twice as big. It's going to be from all over the Nordics, and we're going to do it before their event. So 24 hours later, we already had 20 speakers, and we went live announcing the event.
Wow, that's so aggressive. I like it so much. Not in a negative sense, but being fast.
Yeah. So I remember, you know, this was maybe in June. I remember, you know, me and my wife, we were at the spa, you know, I'm sitting in the bathroom and talking to potential speakers and stuff. All right. But anyway.
It was June 2021, right?
This is 2021, and we decided to do the conference. It was in September. It turned out to be a two-day conference, 46 speakers. And suddenly we were contacted by companies that wanted to sponsor us. We didn't have thought about it. We didn't do any outreach, but suddenly, you know, they came to us because they saw that we tapped into the community. We got the right people there, the right speakers, and they wanted to stand behind it. So suddenly people offered us money to be associated with this and so. So that's when we started to understand that there might be a business around this.
Like, that, and
I,
then...
I need to break it down because I've been running webinars and workshops and events for the past 5 years. You guys went from June to September. So you announced it, September was the conference.
Yeah.
One day, you got your speakers locked in.
Yeah, the first 20, and then
that's crazy.
Yeah, but you know, since we already built this relationship, yes, we already have 120 speakers. We knew which one we wanted to have, and so we learned also from the community what topics do they want to hear about, what potential other speakers do they want. So, and that was a lot of hard work and a lot of engagement with the community. But since we already had that, it was quite easy for us to put it together. But of course, it was a lot of work.
I'm speechless, to be honest. I think that's a very, like, so far, based on your stories, first of all, you hopped on two massive trends. One was lockdown and remote life, Second was Clubhouse, early in, leverage the platform, massive trend. Everyone wanted to be on the platform. So you guys went in early, created the space, created more than that, great experiences. I think 8 to 9 a.m. is a brilliant timing because what are you going to do in that time?
And usually I had to hop on a company meeting at 9 a.m. So it was like Clubhouse, bye-bye. And then it was on the Teams meeting the second after. So,
and another cool thing that I picked up here is like you did not think about commercialization phase.
That is correct.
And you let it grow to a point that the community push you towards commercialization rather than you guys push it towards commercialization.
Yeah, it's much easier to sell something when you have a product that's built together with the people that are going to pay for it.
Yeah.
And at this point, we have to still remember that Thomas and I, at this point in time, still have other careers, you know.
Yeah.
I'm the VP of sales at one company.
We had good. It's not like we were dissatisfied at our jobs.
Exactly. So we both have parallel jobs that, you know, pay our bills where we, you know, we intend to run. And we had at this point, actually, both of us just joined new companies. We're now at this point in time here in the summer, about half a year in into our new companies and new roles. So it's also very fresh. We have to learn a lot of stuff there, and people are expecting us to bring value and so on. But somewhere, in my opinion at least, the tipping point was the digital conference that we hosted here late summer, because it had never been done in our part of the world, and it had never been done in this way with the community, where also one, attendees purchased tickets. It was not a free webinar. You didn't show up for free or anything. You have to buy a ticket as an attendee to join this digital session. Mm-hmm. And then, like Thomas said, we had these big shot, both SaaS companies and VCs, wanted to back this initiative and be part and be associated with this exercise. And obviously there was a transactional element in that. And somewhere there we realized that, okay, now is maybe the time to start considering, is this something that we double down on? And if so, that would require us to actually leave our jobs. Or do we take a step back after this conference and, you know, focus on our real job, so to say, and we continue with the podcast and running that once a month. And I think for us, it was a rather easy decision, and probably for a few different reasons. One, because we're wired in a particular way. we saw an opportunity here, and it was just too big of an intellectual challenge to let go of. Because very early we said that, you know, our sole mission and purpose here is to democratize B2B SaaS knowledge in Europe. Yeah. We've been so inspired by US content, and both Thomas and I have been consumers of content. Like, we love Saster and all the stuff they've done there. But it's very US biased in a way. And we felt like we need to give the Europeans a forum. If you grow a company from, you know, Germany or Netherlands or Sweden, your playing rules are very different if you come from the US. So we wanted to add that to the mix a little bit. So that was our mission from the get-go. And then when we realized that other people also believe in this mission, we can build this together with them. And then for us, we were like, okay, we're going to run with this. Yeah. And then I think also it's fair to say that there's always a risk in leaving your professional career. And sometimes I feel a little bit like, you know, when people tell young guns and be like, oh, you're 23, just run with it. Maybe it's not that easy. You know, if you still have student loans, you have to pay your mortgage and your rent and so on. I think in our case, for Thomas and I, you know, we've had careers for 20 years. We've come a little bit longer through the journey, which means that hopefully, you never know, if this doesn't work out, we can probably go back to have similar jobs. You know, we've built a little bit of a knowledge base there. You know, we have also spouses that have jobs and so on. So for us, while there is a risk associated with this, there's a different type of risk when you are maybe of our age. So sometimes I just want to put that out there that...
Cover yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, some people told us, like, why are you like throwing away 20 years of professional career into this? Who knows what the next step for you guys and so on. But most people are like, you know, very cheerful and excited about this. So there, sometimes in whatever it was, in September, we realized that, okay, we're going to go all into this.
Yeah, I think that there was also a period for a month or two where we sort of, because we decided to do something with it and go all in and, you know, find also a business model that we thought about, you know, what could potential incomes be and see and so on. We talked about potential services that could cater to this audience, but we have been nudged a few times in the right direction by, you know, people that we have met throughout the journey. And one person, he told us that, guys, you should really focus on building the best community. Mm-hmm. I mean, all these other things around, let others do that, and you can collaborate with them, or they can sponsor or be partners, but make sure to sort of focus on the core, on the community. So that's one thing that we decided. And another thing that we already did during that year as well, in parallel, and I think we started maybe already spring or summer 2021, was also that we gathered a few very senior CEOs and founders, and they started to meet once a month to exchange knowledge and help each other out. And that became the embryo for our CEO network. Uh-huh. And think about this. we had only had 2021, where we did the Clubhouse, we did the Slack community, we did the event in September. In December 2021, we launched the CEO Network. So it was a format, Brilliant. A moderated format where you meet digitally 8 or 9 times a year. We also had a meetup at our upcoming big in-person event that we're going to talk about. Only B2B SaaS companies out of the Nordics. And we got 130 CEOs signing up.
Mind-blowing.
I can't even understand how it happened.
I mean, folks don't understand the way, because like I look at, you know, I'm a business owner. You are tapping into such a niche market. And when you tap into a niche market, there is no competition.
No. And right? I think there was a void because it was still COVID, right? And we had a format that was digital. It was easy to sign up on. And then we also used the viral effect on LinkedIn. You know, we introduced every new CEO on LinkedIn and it got a lot of, you know, viral spread in there. So one thing led to another, right? But we had already tested out the format with people that sort of could be a part of the founding fathers team, more or less. So
that's like 100,000 annual recurring revenue right there. Like it's at least.
Yeah, something like that. We started really cheap. We took €1,000 a year, which is nothing. Yeah,
nothing.
It's a little bit more expensive now. Still, double that. It's still very cheap for what you get. So that was one thing that we did. And the other thing was that we realized that, you know, there's a lot of other types of people that also would benefit from these kinds of mastermind groups. So we didn't just launch the CEO network. We launched the executive networks with groups for sales, marketing, people, product, partner, engineering, customer success, operations, and so on. So we launched, in total, I think we launched 32 or something like that network groups that met once a month and that we moderated all of them ourselves. So around 200 network meetings a year online.
And all of them moderated by you two.
Yeah. And that all of them free. Brilliant. The executive network was totally free as well. So only the CEO network was paid.
That is correct. Sometimes, Barrett, you got to do stuff that don't scale.
100%.
That don't scale because it adds more value to you as a business and it adds more value to the recipient on the other side of this exercise. 100%. And for us, we were still, you know, in the infant stages of building a community. And everybody is fighting tooth and nail out there to get input from their customers. If you're a software company, they would like, you know, they take a bullet to understand the ins and outs of what does the customer think about my product? I'd like to have a conversation with them and so on. What's their problems and all of these things. Yeah. And now suddenly we sat on an opportunity where willingly they showed up once a month for 1 hour at a time. Hundreds of peoples in, you know, from big companies in roles with lots of mandate, staff mandate, budget mandate, that sat there with us and willingly shared their headaches, their issues for driving their business units forwards or their companies forward. So it was a way for us to understand where is the entire SaaS movement going? Yeah. Like what's really top of mind for this industry? We can sit here in a theory and say like, oh, let me teach you all how to do X, Y, Z. You know, maybe that's not relevant at all. So here we got it like from the consumer right away. They specifically told us month in, month out, here's what's top of mind. And we could start doing some pattern matching, which then also, again, helped us accelerate the next phase of our journey, which was a little bit more, you know, doubling down on the content exercise. It also helped us build some of the big conferences and so on.
Yeah, because we decided in November, I think, 2021, that we should do the largest in-person B2B SaaS conference in the Nordics. We have a great venue here. We're actually going to go there in just after we record this. It takes around 1,000 to 1,200 people. But this was still COVID.
Yeah.
So it was COVID restrictions. You couldn't gather people. But we hoped for the COVID restrictions to sort of get lifted. So we booked the venue. And when you do that, you need to pay 50% upfront.
Yep.
Both on the venue and on the food. And we decided we want to do an exclusive, you know, great experience. So we don't want you to stand in lines on a food truck or get out in the city to find food. We want to treat you well. So we spend like 100 euros per person on food. So imagine if you're planning for 1,000 people, how much money that is, right? They wanted to get 50% in advance. And we had no, you know, we had no credit. Like we were new kids on the block, but we went for it. And then 2 months before the event, because the event was in April, in mid-February, I think we had less than 100 signups and we wanted to be 1,000. And I think, you know,
because people won't commit at this point. It's COVID, you know, like the restrictions were like, you have to be, if you're in a physical space at a conference or a concert or anything like that, the organizer needs to guarantee 10 meters distance in each direction to the person next to you.
Yeah. And in our agreement with the venue, it was, you know, a threshold when it was 2 months left. We could sort of, what do you say?
Cancel, but cancel. they would obviously hold half of them funds.
Yeah, exactly. So, but we decided to move on, and somewhere later in February, the restrictions was let go, and sort of the ticket sales went up in the sky.
Crazy.
You know, the last week we sold. Just the last week, we sold 250 tickets, and the last day, 100 tickets. So we sold out.
Yeah.
And we had a perfect timing. So everyone had a great appetite of going out and meeting each other and so on. So, and it was a really great event. And we also had the luck during the during this journey to meet a fantastic woman that is good, you know, with project management around events and has really a lot of knowledge. So otherwise also it would probably been not as good as it was. So we have a great event team that we work with now that feels really great. And we are soon doing our third event now in April the 16th and 17th. We are doing SaaS Yes 2024. So it's the third big physical event here in the Nordics.
That's actually how I found you.
Yeah.
I was looking for SaaS conferences in Europe. And to your point, it's very dry. There is some in London, there is one in Dublin, and there is you guys. And
yeah, I would say we are the main players, and we are also, you might have seen also, we have expanded our operations. We started out in the Nordics, then I think end of 2021, beginning, oh, maybe 2022, we also included the Baltics, and last year we have also established ourselves in the Benelux, and we did our first SaaS event in Amsterdam, and we are doubling down on that this fall as well.
So how many conferences do you run now per year?
So we have two main conferences. We have the one that obviously you stumble across here, the one in Malmö, which is in April. So every year in spring,
right.
As a coincidence, it has happened to be in April every year. It might be in March next year. That's the one we do in the Nordics, in the very southern parts of Sweden, in Malmö, beautiful city. But if you don't know where that is, you probably know where Copenhagen is, and then Malmö is half an hour train,
20
ride.
20 minutes from Copenhagen Airport with a train.
Yeah. So I always
say Malmö is a cleaner version of Berlin.
There you go. There, we'll take that. We'll take that. I don't know if it's as hip and cool, but that is our spring event. And then we also do our fall event to communicate and do a bunch of stuff with mainland Europe. So if the Malmö event obviously more attracts people from Northern Europe, our Amsterdam event in October this year, it will be 1st and 2nd of October. That is our way to engage with mainland Europe. So you have obviously lots of people from Benelux, Germany, France, and also UK and so on. But on a piece of paper, other than, you know, the clientele being slightly different, the two conferences, they look alike. If you've been to one SaaS conference, you'll recognize some of the energy, some of the theme, and some of the exercises and so on. So we try really to to stick to our brand. Those are the two main conferences we run every year. Then what we also do in terms of physical appearances, if you may, or what we call meetups. We run a bunch of meetups locally in different cities across predominantly what we call the New Nordics. So the Nordic countries plus Baltics and Benelux in this case. So we run a bunch of meetups where together with a partner, we host a social exercise, you know, where we have some drinks together. SaaS folks, only SaaS operators are welcome to these events. And, you know, it could be anywhere from 50 to 150 people getting together for an evening, maybe listening to one session or something like that, and then just networking. So those we
when
do
we say a partner
quite
here,
regularly.
It's not the paid partnership. It's just that the SaaS, local SaaS company is inviting people to their office and fixes something to drink and eat. And then we just hang around and have a nice time. So there is no agenda and, you know, no one gets any lead lists or something like that. So it's just, you know, just a social exercise.
Yeah, it's very dry. I mean, you look into, I think entrepreneurs, executives just want to go to events with no, not so much agenda or like action point, just to network, right?
Yeah.
And it's so, I'm so risk averse towards subscribing to any event because God knows how many email newsletters I'm going to get. Yeah. I just want to show up and talk to folks. I don't need to.
Yeah. I mean, here's the feedback we are receiving and something that we're building upon here. So I think that there's probably a bunch of strong, small, like initiatives locally and so on. But what was missing in this context was a European perspective.
Yes.
You know, if you're a CEO sitting in Amsterdam or in London or in Stockholm, you don't care where your sounding board sits. What you do care is that you want to be surrounded with other strong CEOs. If they happen to sit in a city far away from you, frankly, you don't give a crap. What you give a crap is about, is this a person I want to hang out with because I can learn from her or him and vice versa? And this is a gap that we started to fill. You know, if you look at our CEO network, today we have, it's Europe's largest B2B SaaS scale-up. And scale-up in our world is 2 million euros and upward.
Right.
We have CEOs from 8 different countries represented in the network here during 2024. And again, it's because they don't care where I sit and where my counterpart sits. I care being associated with these people that I can learn, somebody that's done this journey and so on. So that's something that we wanted to build upon. I think another big difference was that, with all the greatest respect to all other initiatives out there, again, there was missing this European format. So if you bring somebody on the stage from the US that has raised a gazillion amount of dollars, maybe that doesn't help the little Dutch startup that doesn't have a gazillion amount of dollars. So we wanted to flip that around to make it this a little bit more relatable. So by having the right companies, by having the right people speak to them. And then we wanted to make sure that this is not a brag exercise where, you know, somebody pays to be on stage and then either it's a sales pitch or they talk about how fantastic they are. All our sessions, first of all, you can't buy a session, regardless of how much money you pay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. And all our sessions have to follow a particular format.
Uh-huh.
Which is very much focused on the how-to. So if you're going to talk about you should turn your customer success team into a revenue team, great, but that's not good enough. What we want to find out, okay, give me the 5 steps as to how I make this transformation. So it's very tactical, it's very hands-on. And that, I think, has resonated really well with the operators because they don't want to hear buzzwords. They want to basically walk away from one of our sessions and be like, okay, I listened to this person here now. She talked about how to increase prices with 10% and still have customers loving us. We're going to follow the 5 steps she gave us. That is what people want to have. And that is something that I think that we've managed together with the community to get right.
I think that's very necessary. God knows how many conferences I went to and I sat in front of a presentation, got out more confused. And I thought, I thought I knew about branding, but now it's getting more confusing than before. Like, what was it? Like, what are we doing? Like, I went to a SaaS conference and the presentation was all about how Nike does it. It's like, I cannot care less about Nike.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's about making things relatable.
Yeah.
And I also believe that there's a big portion here in being a trusted source. And trust is something, at least maybe that we are like from Sweden, so maybe we're a little bit naive in this sense, but trust is something that's there from the beginning and you could potentially lose it. So we don't necessarily believe that that's something you earn, but there is still an element of where it's easier to trust certain people. So in our case, we came in as one independent. There's a bunch of VC vendors out there that are trying to build forums and platforms themselves. But I don't want to say there's a catch. It's their business model. And I genuinely think they want to share and probably share some of our missions. But the problem is that I don't necessarily want to spill my dirty secrets and go into details and so on with somebody that, you know, is my owner, potentially my owner. So it's a little bit, you know, uncomfortable, that relationship. It's like, I know they essentially want to invest money in me.
Right.
So there's that power relationship. And for us, it's like, I don't want to sell you anything. We don't want to invest money in you. What we want to do is democratize knowledge together with you.
Yeah.
We provide the forum, you provide the knowledge and experience, and we bring that to the surface. I think that was a really big thing. The other thing is, not in any way were we famous in the community. Not at all.
No.
But I think quickly people realized that, okay, who are these two guys? And then they realized that, okay, they have been on these journeys themselves for many years. Mm-hmm. And while we very early and quickly said, like, you know, we have to lift our hands here, we don't have the solutions to all the problems, but we have seen most of the problems from 0 to 100 million euros in ARR. And I think that made it also relatable for people that are on similar journeys, be like, okay, here we have two guys that really understand the business. They understand the challenges. And that also in the beginning helped us, of course, you know, create some type of a content calendar that we knew would land well. It's just to make an example here. I don't know anything about phishing. If I would create a phishing forum, I mean, either have to like learn a lot about phishing to get their trust or so on, or I might not, you know, we might not be as targeted with some of the messages and so on. So I think those two things you have to keep in mind when you build a community.
Yeah.
Just going back to the podcast, you know, we had 1, 2, 3 guests that we knew of, you know, people we knew. We recorded one podcast and we got the recommendation to a CEO. So we did a podcast with him. And we had the third one that we knew. Then we didn't have anyone. So, you know, we tried research. We asked some of our contacts. One CEO that we knew said, you know, now I can't really introduce you guys. You're just two guys in a basement starting out. It doesn't feel, you know, credible. And so, you know, it was a little bit tough from the beginning to find the guest, but you know, already after 6 or 7 episodes, people started to reaching out.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I listened to this episode. Can I be on the show? Or you should really have that person on the show. And we also got more attention on LinkedIn and so on, and starting finding what are the cool companies in Norway? What are the cool companies in Denmark and Finland and so on? And then, you know, things just went on a roll.
One thing that I really appreciate about you both after talking for 40 minutes is the humility I get from you both, that you're willing to take the back seat, let the community drive you and just like come in and help whenever is needed. And I think it's a great asset to have, because if you want to grow a community, you cannot be at the front of it.
No, no. And we are not the experts there. I mean, we find the expert. We try to, you know, give them a voice in the community. I mean, we are there to sort of make the platform available and, you know, make sure that the event happens and all of those things. But otherwise, we And if we wouldn't have to market things and so on, we could be even more in the background than we are right now, I think.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it comes down to better to what type of community you want to build.
Yeah.
You know, there's plenty of communities out there where the product is in the forefront, or people from the company are in the forefront. But you have to relate it to what is your mission. You know, and if we go back to what we say, is like we want to democratize B2B SaaS knowledge. Well, that's not done with two people. So in order to truly live this statement and this value and mission we have to do it with a bunch of other people. And these bunch of other people, rightfully so, they should get the recognition they deserve for their contribution to this. And then that has obviously, you know, a fantastic effect, a positive effect, where if we do this together, more people feel committed. And then even more people want to have an interest in this, and more people get committed. So that is our approach. Like Thomas said, like, you know, our ambition is not to be in the forefront of this. Our ambition is to manage and facilitate the platform where these fantastic conversations happen.
I want to end this conversation. This was, because we have a community for UX designers, and I'm going to listen to this at least one more time to, I think there's a lot of actionable insight for folks that are growing communities. I think your humble approach to building communities is impressive, to say the least. I think you are not afraid of going in the trenches, doing the hard work. Like it's very refreshing, because I talk to a lot of younger folks and I get a sense of entitlement that I don't know where it comes from. Because whenever I talk to folks like you that actually sitting on very, very valuable, impactful businesses, it's very overwhelmingly clear for me that anyone like you that has done something meaningful, they were not afraid to go in the trenches and do the hard work and do things that are free and not scalable.
Yeah. It's all about the grind. I mean, I don't know how many nights or evenings I've sat, you know, DM people, having one-to-one conversations, producing personalized images and all of that. I mean, people might see a lot of personalized things that we do. They think everything is by pressing a button and then it's an AI doing everything. It's not. It's often one of the founders sitting and spending a lot of time late nights and, you know, doing manual things sometimes. Of course, we automate things as well. We do smart things, but sometimes there is value in just doing it by hand.
I agree.
Because, you know, every time I do a personalized image of someone that says, meet me at Sassiest, I go into the profile, I see this person, and that's that person that works for that company. I go in maybe on the DM, I see we had a conversation 1 year ago. I can see, you know, that this person has participated in these things. And I mean, that's, every person in the community is valuable, and you want to have, you know, you want to nurture that relation. And if you just send a mass thing and the person gets an ugly image or get the wrong information and so on, that hurts that relation, right?
Last question. You guys are running into another meeting. You started. You had a career. I mean, 20 years, folks in the career. You probably got paid so much, so well, and you started.
But Daniel did at least.
Yeah, you thought that there is a gap.
I picked the right career path, Thomas. You got to be in sales leadership, product marketing, not as well paid.
Stay in sales.
How did you go about managing your partnership? You are friends, but when you. Mm-hmm. Engage in a business partnership means that we have to think about the business entity. What's the format of it? Like, is it 50-50? And these are the things that really, really get in the way of startups scaling, because founders, co-founders, they don't have this hard conversation in the beginning. So I'm curious about, especially that you guys had a friendship before, how did you go about talking about this hard stuff?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's a great question that I think, again, many underestimate the importance of it. So when we started this, first we started off with, you know, just looking at each other and telling each other this, that our relationship is more important than the business. Mm-hmm. So what we have as two individuals here is more important than the business.
Yeah.
With that being said, now as we're going into this business motion together, let's formalize some of these things. And we didn't do everything from the get-go, but what we did from the get-go was obviously, like, when you incorporate, we wanted to make sure that, you know, it's a fair game. We're in this together. We're not in it at all. So it's a 50-50 split. We own, you know, half of the business each. And when it comes to certain big decisions, both of us have to be involved. So, for example, I can't decide here or Thomas that I'm selling this business without the other one agreeing to this and so on. But what happened here as we grew the business, we had to further formalize certain things and put that in writing, because it might be that, you know, now there's a real business. It's a rather big business these days, you know, with millions in revenue and so on. We had to talk about the hard stuff, just like maybe almost in a marriage. And I don't, that doesn't sound very romantic, but Thomas and I, we booked a retreat. That part was kind of romantic, but where we sat basically for a day and a half to hash out these things. And then we would discuss things like, what happens if one of us can't work, for example? Like, you don't want to do this anymore, but you own half of the business. Then it's not fair that the other one does all the heavy lifting and you can't get out of it. Or what happens if one of us gets sick? So we talked about some personal things that could happen, but also some strategic possible, call it, indifferences. If one wants to go left, the other one wants to go right, how do we handle that? So we did that over a day and a half at a spa where we rented the biggest conference room they have just for the two of us. And we hashed it down and put it in a document. So it's very clear and fair to ourselves, again, to protect the personal relationship we have, but also for the greater good of the business. Yeah.
I think we haven't had any big disagreements. We have had disagreements. One wanted to go left and one right, or so on. And, you know, if both don't want to do it, we don't do it. So, and sometimes it's only that one is not ready to do it yet. It could be the timing as well. So, but so far, so good, I would say.
Definitely.
Daniel, Thomas, I cannot thank you enough to come on the podcast and be so transparent about your journey. I learned tons, and you convinced me to come to this SaaS, this edition of SaaS Seas. I'm happy to come back to Malmo. I think it will be fantastic.
There you go.
Any last words?
Well, thank you for having us on your show. Much appreciated. This was exciting. We don't often talk about our own story. We listen to other people's stories. So this was also fun for us, of course.
Yeah. So thank you for this therapy session. And I hope it could be valuable for some of you out there.
Thank you for listening to this episode. For more information, go to bonanza-studios.com.